Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Welcome into Stone Cold Strohs. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can find them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975. And you can read their work on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, Houston catches comeback fever, but Frauber just may have a cold. Speaking of cold, what's going on with the rotation? And while we're talking temperature, is Jordan's bat ready to heat up? So guys, Astros sandwich being swept in between taking two of three from the Mets and Twins. Or to paraphrase Brian Fantana, 60% of the time, they win every time. Houston opens their series with the Mariners in Seattle on Monday. This early on, we are all prisoners of sample size, but it's the only data we have. So to that, I pose this. Are the Astros closer to that team that took the series wins from the Mets and Twins, or closer to the team that got railroaded by San Fran?
Well, view it this way. If you were given a win in the standings or a loss in the standings by series outcome, they'd be 2-1. So while the record 4-5 heading into Seattle, there's no reason to be unduly concerned. The Giants, off sweeping the Astros, swept the Mariners. The Dodgers begin the week in second place because the Giants are 8-1. They are rolling. Their pitching's been tremendous. And they're swinging the bats a little bit collectively, unlike the Astros. Unlike everyone in the American League West. So it's a 9-game sliver of the season. It's a trivial percentage of the season, right? The Astros batting .216 heading into Seattle. Well, the Rangers are 8-2. They're batting .192. Some clutch hits here and there. Excellent starting pitching for the Rangers. The Rangers are going to have a stretch this season where they go 4-5, likely significantly worse than that. The Mariners trying to not leave themselves in the starting block. The Astros and Rangers are in Seattle this week. So for mid-April, or approaching mid-April, some pressure on the Mariners since everyone was down on them with their crappy offseason of adding basically nothing offensively. So for the Astros, yes, there are a number of spots, particularly with the offense, that you're thinking, uh-oh, or can we get into it a little bit? Well, start with a Jordan Pulse with a very timely hit on Sunday. But while the lineup has been puny in its overall output, it's not going to stay this bad. Are they going to blossom into the 2017 Astros offense or the 2019 Astros offense? No, but it's not going to stay like this overall. So I think you still lean more to they're a pretty good team than a pretty bad team if it's a binary decision.
You could look at this either good or bad. Where most of the struggles are coming from on the offense or the guys at the top of the order that you're counting on the most, at least right now. Pena after that hot start, you know, hitting .161. Jordan maybe heating up, but still hitting below .200. Christian Walker, still lots of strikeouts on breaking balls, but you're starting to see some extra base hits there, but he's hitting under .200. Yiner Diaz isn't even hitting .100. So it's the guys right there where you really depend on them. They just haven't come through yet, but Paredes showing signs of life, 4 hits the other day, Jordan with the big home run. Tuve's been pretty good all year long, minus some, you know, errors and some bad base running, but we're pretty accustomed to that kind of stuff without Tuve. So I think they'll be all right. It's you worry the outfield, Jake Meyers really isn't the one that's killing you this year. That was the big concern with him coming in and penciled in him hitting 250. You'll take that from Jake Meyers, but right field, you're getting absolutely nothing out of that. And like I said, catcher, I wonder if maybe Caratini needs to find his way into the lineup a little more often, especially with how right-handed heavy this offense is. He can provide you a little something there while Yiner gets going. And we know he could play some other positions, but with DH pretty much locked up with Yordan, it's just hard to find much of a role for Caratini when he's not catching outside of, you know, pinch hitting from time to time.
It's 9 games for Yiner. He's looked absolutely horrible, right? He still just flat out swings at way too many pitches. But we know the thunder is in the bat. He clearly profiles as a much better offensive player than Victor Caratini. So the idea that, hey, should they be splitting the job? No. You need to hit your way or bat your way out of slumps. And for those who need the 2x4 to the head as a reminder, spring training stats mean nothing unless they're helping you make the team as they did Cam Smith. But as we've talked about before, he's not facing a diet of minor league caliber pitchers anymore. And Cam Smith looks befuddled by big league breaking stuff. Also, a little taste of Jose Abreu disease of, wait, the count's 0-2 already? Taking some early count fastballs. So 2-for-18 with 9 strikeouts. Another couple of weeks of that, and Cam Smith would belong in AAA. But who's going to get the outfield playing time? Geez, and as we mentioned last week, whither Jacob Melton? Presumably, he's in traction or facing some serious disc replacement surgery since the Astros get around to a week into the season saying, yeah, he's going to be out for a long time. Weeks, not days, after not having played at all at AAA. Right, so there was the maybe faint hope for a left-handed bat in the system who could join the outfield party, but ixnay on that for a long time. But spring training, right? The big hitters of spring training, the Cam Smith story, Jeremy Pena going nuts. While he's popped a couple of home runs, he's batting 161 with a 612 OPS. And Zach DiCenzo secured his extra man spot on the team. Now, he hadn't had much run, but he hadn't done anything with it either. And if you want to stew in your own juices, it's very, very, very early. But heading into the week, I'll give you a guess. Name the two players who lead the major leagues in hits. Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker with 6 home runs, 5 home runs, and 15 runs batted in. Non-Aaron Judge division, Tucker leads the major leagues in home runs and RBI. And after a scuffling first few games, classic early season Bregman, he's going off a 6 RBI game on Sunday night, but all spilt milk. Josh referenced Paredes with a 4-hit game. Hey, maybe it could have been a 5-hit game if Altuve didn't get into the brain-dead base-running pattern already, get caught stealing third base or picked off for a caught stealing with 2 out. What are you doing, Jose? Yeah, but Jose's hitting .350. Tucker, of course you'd rather have him in the Astros outfield than Cam Smith or anyone who plays in the Astros outfield, including Altuve. Right, Yordan, the select days that he's in there, I'll take Yordan over Tuck for the rest of this season for the upside of offensive output. But geez, with that Vlad Guerrero contract, Kyle Tucker start, what's he asking for? $1 billion?
Well, if we're playing the what if game, what if Minnesota doesn't use their closer in the 8th instead of the 9th? Maybe you don't even get the opportunity. And then Jacob Melton on the IL with upper back discomfort, as the team's calling it, or as I call it, a single trip to the driving range. Now, Charlie, you mentioned the much maligned offseason for Seattle, not bringing in a bat, but the pitching's there. What do you think we're going to learn, or what are you looking for out of this series with Seattle?
Seattle is good a pitcher's environment as they're in the major league, so it wasn't set up as a place where the Astros bats go off, especially against a Mariners pitching staff that's strong. Starting with Logan Gilbert, who's a legit ace, led the league in innings pitched last season, 3.30 ERA, first 2 starts this season, 18 strikeouts, 1 walk, and he's had some great games against the Astros, though they've gotten to him also. And it's Luis Castillo on Tuesday, and how impressive is this? It's Luis Castillo on Wednesday. Well, different Luis Castillo. They're carrying 2 Luis Castillos filling in while George Kirby is on the injured list. But while the Astros aren't hitting, and mentioned the Rangers 8-2 while not hitting at all for average, the Mariners starting the Astros series batting .213, right? Sluggish to inept offense He's all over the place. Right? The A's start the week with the best batting average among the American League West clubs at 238. Then you have the Angels at 233. Then you get to the Mariners and the Astros and the Rangers. So it's still quite early, right? Neither Semien nor Seager is batting close to 200 for the Rangers. Jock Peterson's barely batting 100 for the Rangers. Those are probably expected to be their three best offensive players. Adolis Garcia picking up where he left off, batting in the 160s so far. But it's just 10 games. Really good hitters. Yordan Alvarez, let's go with him as the example. The entire month of May last season, he had two home runs and drove in four runs for the entire calendar month. So that a big-time player goes 4-for-29 or only has two RBI in a 10-game stretch, over 162, rhymes with hit, happens.
I think for me, I'm going to be paying attention to how the starters do as far as just eating up some innings, because we know with Blanco getting pulled in the previous series, had to go to the bullpen, use a lot of guys. Even Montero came in and gave you two good innings. But Contreras, I think he's being optioned down. Logan Van Wy is going to be joining the club. So they'll have some other options. And I kind of wondered why Van Wy didn't make it out of camp, because he looked really good this spring. But either way, he'll get his chance to prove himself coming up. And that's what I'll be really paying attention to, because Wesneski, is he going to be able to give you 5-6 innings? As you mentioned, the second time through the rotation, everybody struggled outside of Hunter Brown. Framber Valdez sounds like he's dealing with a cold, sore throat, Espada was saying, and hopefully that's not going around the locker room too much to where it affects other guys. So I think health's going to be part of it. And can these guys not shoot themselves in the foot with Arrigetti, him hitting guys and walking guys, and then you hang a curveball to get the game blown open? He had to come out of the game really early. So bullpen has had to do a little bit of heavy lifting. I figured that would happen the first trip through the rotation, but it's happened the second trip through. So you're going to deal with that in April. I'm not too disappointed with that. We'll get to the other bullpen guys, as Brandon mentioned, later, but for me, I'd like to see Wesneski give you something and show that, yeah, he can be that fifth starter, because we know, you know, Luis Garcia is not coming through that door anytime soon. And, you know, we'll still see with McCullers as he works his way back.
You know, there was zero chance of them going through the season with five starting pitchers if they all were pitching great, right? Injuries, the schedule, they have 17 games and 17 days upcoming in one stretch. Next week was the first time where if you wanted to give your starters 5 days rest between starts, that would be the first time they needed a sixth starter. Well, Framber sleeping with the window open or whatever, if he has to miss a turn or be pushed back, the call for a sixth starter comes early. While the Astros don't have one elite pitching prospect at this point in their minor league system, A.J. Bluebaugh, 24 years old, two excellent starts to his season at Sugarland. So in a pinch, he's a guy who can get a shot. Right, last year was Jake Bloss in kind of an emergency situation, and he was basically overmatched. Blueball is a bit older, more minor league experience. Colton Gordon, first two times, also decent starts, good starts at Sugarland. So if the Astros need a temp, they have a couple of easy candidates. You hit on Arrigetti, right? Command is the story with him. His stuff is good. It's not electric, particularly the fastball. It's walking guys and gopher balls that had him with the big problems before he settled in after the All-Star break last season. Ronel Blanco pitched to probably an unreasonable standard to hope that he can match this season, so that he's been mediocre and then worse in his two starts. Too early to be concerned, although maybe the antenna go up some on Ronel Blanco if this turns out to be a JP France crash back to earth this year type of season. That would be a big problem, but I think Blanco's stuff, his pedigree, is so much better than JP France's. If Blanco settles in, I think I said a 3.25 ERA would be just fine. 3.50 would be just fine if he's giving you close to six innings each time out.
Speaking of pitching, you know, we talked before the season started about the questions around the bullpen with Presley's departure. And there certainly are still some questions, but guys like King, O'Kurt, and now Gusto have stepped up and performed early when you needed them, with some of the rotation not being able to go deep. What are your thoughts so far on the bullpen to this point?
So far, so fine. You know, other than the first time out, really, for Hader and Abreu. And beyond those two guys, it'll piece together. Brian King, I think, adds another page to the confidence in him book pretty much every time out. Ort and Whitley working their way back. They'll each get chances. And so Contreras, a couple of bad outings, also pitched maybe 3 times in 4 days or 3 times in 5 days. They're going to do some of that up down for flexibility in the bullpen. Mindful of the fact when you send a guy down, he's got to stay down there for 2 weeks unless it's replacing an injured player. But, you know, the Guardians last season had far and away the best bullpen in all of baseball. Once you get past Emmanuel Clase, a fairly anonymous group, and no guys with 3, 4, 5 year resumes of excellence, bullpens, there's that year-to-year turnover that I guess in a good year, things just seem to piece together. You get a Taylor Scott to do what he did the first two-thirds of last season. You know, maybe Brian King on a longer-term basis is that third-best guy and really good in the Astros bullpen for the longer haul. Ryan Pressly, by the way, off to a start with the Cubs.
Just quickly back to Blanco. What worries me a little bit is we saw this in spring training with him. Like, he didn't have a great spring. And that final start against the Space Cowboys, we're like, oh, okay, good. That looks like the old Blanco. But now it feels like he's kind of reverted back to how he pitched this spring. So I just hope that's not a sign of things to come with him. But back to the bullpen, I like what I'm seeing overall from these guys. No complaints. Maybe Taylor Scott, don't have Altuve rub off on you and airmail the ball over the first baseman's head. That I prefer we avoid that. But overall, he's pitched pretty well. Okert still with the 0 ERA. And I've been pretty critical of Josh Hader, so I got to give him some credit here. Really great job when you needed him in that finale. You know, going 2 innings there, getting you that win, closing the door. Abreu came in, did his thing. A little wild early for Abreu there. He kind of started going back to the slider. We were praising him for going to the fastball in the last video, but it's okay. He rebounded. He got through it. So, you know, credit to Hader and Abreu, those guys getting things done. But overall, I feel pretty good about this bullpen. You got King and Taylor Scott to go back and forth, seventh inning, and Okert's a guy you can count on. And Van Wy, I'm pretty bullish on him. I think he could come up here and help you. So far, so good for him. So I like the pitching. It's just these bats got to get going.
Let me draw a loose comparison between Ronel Blanco and Christian Walker. Wait, huh? Here it is. Blanco didn't pitch winter ball this year because of the blew past his career high innings workload a year ago. So maybe spring training and geez, you have a month. Yeah, but creatures of habit, your body rhythm, mentally, who knows? It'll play out over a longer period of time this season. But maybe Ronel Blanco is just going to take a little longer to settle in because his offseason run up to the big league season, different. Christian Walker, mid-spring training, has the oblique flare-up, shut down for a couple weeks. He didn't get the volume of plate appearances, so maybe it's just going to take him a little longer to get consistency of timing and pitch recognition to settle into his season and deliver the production the Astros signed up for.
And just to piggyback on Josh's point, credit where it's due. Hader got more outs than Blanco in the series finale, by my math. So if we're going to criticize, we also have to be ready to give credit. Just a quick message. If you're interested in advertising your service or product on this show, you can contact our friends on the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is also in our description.
Just as a bow on the season finale, the Astros coming from 7-1 down to win the game, down 7-5 going to the ninth. The entirety of 2024, the Astros never won a game they were behind after 8 innings. 0-56 when they were behind after 8 innings. When the game was tied after 8 innings, they were 8-14, right? Hader giving up all those ninth inning home runs and tie games. And when they were down after 8, you could go home, right? Drive safely. Good night, everybody. Zip and 56. Well, that's off the table very early in 2025 with the win on Sunday. Also, the Astros never came back from a deficit of more than 5 runs to win last season. 7-1 on Sunday. They've already topped that with a 6-run comeback to victory.
It's comeback fever. Catch it, baby. So let's continue to be prisoners of the moment. We've had fandom swings, I guess, or observational mood swings that this offseason to the early season that have ranged from how could Dana Brown trade Kyle Tucker, to look what Dana Brown got for Kyle Tucker, back to how could Dana Brown trade Kyle Tucker. So let's add another length of track onto that coaster. Vlad Guerrero Jr., you mentioned that, Charlie, signs with Toronto, 14 years, $500 million. So, Charlie, if anyone still has any doubt that trading away Kyle Tucker was the right move, what would you say to them after this news?
Well, for 2025, it still remains to be determined whether it's the right move. But as a long-term play, getting not a mega elite prospect, not Cam Smith was in any of the top 40 lists, but indisputably top 75 and better than any prospect the Astros had otherwise in their system. Right? Paredes, over the last two seasons, offensive numbers very comparable to Alex Bregman, a bona fide major league offensive player. And Wesneski, right? The Astros hope to have him pitch up from what his tools have resulted with previously in the major leagues. But Kyle Tucker is a better player than Vlad Guerrero Jr. I mean, Vlad Guerrero at his best offensively, better than anything that Kyle Tucker's done in his career, save these first 2 weeks to this season. But Vlad Guerrero, he's had weight issues. So 26 years old, now $500 million over the next 14 years. I'd be scared to death about his conditioning. He also plays an easier, less significant defensive position as a first baseman. And as you age out, the only place you can move from first base is to DH, right? Whereas Kyle Tucker, if he signs for 14 years, maybe in his mid-30s, he becomes a first baseman. The Astros, if Kyle Tucker gets within, oh, I don't know, $200 million of what Vladdy Jr. got, they weren't going to be in the bidding. I just want to add to this, for those saying, well, that's because Jim Crane's a cheapskate. He has his philosophy, and it's going to be further tested, especially if the Astros turn out to be not all that in 2025. But it has served him well to this point. They have all that dead money on the payroll that comes off. The Astros are carrying the sixth largest opening day payroll in Major League Baseball when you account for Abreu and McCullers and Montero and the pay down of Presley with that. The sixth highest payroll in baseball. So Jim Crane hasn't said, we're going to operate now like the Pirates or the Marlins. They're paying the price for their own sins of contracts in 2025. But that's different from saying, yeah, if he wouldn't pay $400 million for Kyle Tucker, boo! The Blue Jays are owned by Rogers Communications. If anyone can sit at the poker table with Steve Cohen and go hand for hand with no limit, Toronto's about the closest in big league baseball. They were also desperate after being spurned by every big free agent, right? They bid hard on Otani. They bid hard on Soto. They bid hard on Judge. They bid hard years ago on Stanton. Whew, off the hook on that one. If they let their own 26-year-old star to superstar walk, they're going to be trying to market your team going forward. So the Blue Jays were kindly over, pretty much over a barrel. And near Niagara Falls, I suppose that makes some sense. But that should not say that the Astros should have been willing to do for Kyle Tucker what the Blue Jays were willing to do for Vlad Guerrero Jr. in the end.
I'm going to put a lot of this on Crane. Why are we in this hole? Because you decided to fire your really good GM after you won the World Series and signed Montero and Abreu to terrible contracts, which have put you in this hole. So that's on him. He didn't have to make that move. Click was doing a great job. Here we are. I mean, remember, Click's the guy that got you Yiner for peanuts and Phil Maton. He made some incredible moves while he was here, and Crane put you in this spot. And this strategy worked a little more when you had all these great prospects coming up in the system. They're not in that place anymore where somebody's going to come out from the system and save them and turn into the next Kyle Tucker or whoever you want it to be. I hate to be wishy-washy, but I understand, like, $500 million. That's probably what it's going to take to get Tucker. We've never seen the Astros do something like that, because you're right. To me, I'd rather have Tucker than Vlad Guerrero. Now, I wonder, is Guerrero's contract going to be higher than Tucker's because it's the tax you have to pay if you're Toronto to get somebody to stay and play there? I feel like you have to overpay to get somebody up there. Even though it's a beautiful city, Toronto has struggled to land any of these big ticket players, and they finally got one. But I think Tucker's going to get somewhere around $400 or $500 million. I would rather pay Tucker for his late 20s and early 30s than continue to pay guys like Abreu and Christian Walker for their mid 30s. We don't know how it's going to work with Christian Walker, but he sure is striking out a lot. I don't think he's going to be a Abreu 2.0, though I'm seeing a lot of that on Twitter going around because it's some ugly at-bats. I think he'll turn things around, but I'm going to be a little bitter about Tucker. But and also with Bregman, he signed a short-term deal, high money AAV, but you could have got him on a three-year contract. You just didn't want to pay for it. And I get it, Paredes, he might slip in and do just fine in Bregman's spot, but I would have liked to have at least kept one of these guys. And if you look at the offensive numbers, yeah, it's early, but the Astros as a team have one more home run than Kyle Tucker. Now, he's played a few more games than the Astros, if we're being fair about this, but the numbers are the numbers. Kyle Tucker and Bregman are hitting the ball hard, and you're seeing what happens when Yordan comes out and he slumps a little bit. There's not much else to push this team along while we wait for Yordan to come around. Thank goodness Altuve's gotten off to the start he has this year. And a lot of those have just been kind of base hits. It's not like he's smacking four or five, six home runs already this year.
Something Jim Crane would never, ever regret unless under the powers of sodium, admit unless under the powers of sodium pentothal, if he has the regret. But knowing the way the market has shifted and where the Astros are now, more vulnerable than they've been in years, with a farm system that's not exactly flowing with upper end talent. If they could have gotten Kyle Tucker at 8 years, $225 million last spring training, 2024, would they be saying, yeah, probably should have had a little more foresight and locked in an elite player through his late 20s and the remainder of the prime years of his career? I don't think Crane actually would feel that way at this point. If the 2025 Astros wind up 84-78 and miss the playoffs, well, he still didn't tell us the truth, even if the truth had shifted.
Yeah, and in the spirit of that, it is interesting. I've seen Chandler Rome mention this a couple times. He thinks the Astros are too late on the early extension bus when it comes to Hunter Brown, who now, you know, we talked about him having Boris as his representation. Now, it's getting ahead of those things that allows your window to stay open at a more cost-effective rate. And Josh, you bring up James Click, and as far as great as he was at maneuvering, fair is fair. Part of that dead money that Charlie was highlighting there was engineered by that McCullers extension that was on his watch. So there's good and the bad, and same thing with his predecessor. One last reminder that if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen to the podcast on places like Apple or Spotify, do us a solid, give us a 5-star rating. We do appreciate that. Our next scheduled episode drops on Thursday, so make sure you subscribe to this channel, Sports Map Houston, and our other channel, Sports Map Texans. We drop bonus episodes as news breaks. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon Singh. So long, and until next time, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.